We are not working on a funny idea of saying only the unit of the opposition can remove Mnangagwa. But we can work with those that are in ZANU-PF in order to put a stop to an illegal extension of the current president.
That's a sharp accusation from one of President Emmerson Mnangagwa's fiercest critics. But the question is, the story isn't just about the opposition divisions in Zimbabwe. It's also about the failures of the Mnangagwa government that appears to have completely let the country down.
Absolutely. Daily struggles from food, healthcare, jobs are piling up, and Zimbabweans are paying the heavy price.
The things that we've heard in North Korea, in Russia, we never believed that it is going to happen to us, where citizens eventually no right at all.
We're not happy as our veterans.
In a country like Zimbabwe, where dissents are being crushed and opposition leaders forced into exile, can we really expect them to carry all the blame?
That's a very good question, but is the opposition doing enough? And if they're saying they're under siege, then who puts the government into account?
In Zimbabwe, we are 16 million. Those that feel it's not what we are doing is not enough are also free to complement what we are doing or to do something completely different. And that will be welcome as long as the goals are achieved.
So here's the crux of the matter. Zimbabwe's opposition is divided. But is that the disease or just a symptom of how far the Mnangagwa government will go to cling to power?
Today, we look deep into Zimbabwe's state of politics and what real change might really look like. Hello, I'm George Okachi, and this is Under the Baobab.
And my name is Mimi Mefoneu. Under the Baobab, we make complex issues personal.
And just to mention, we are here under the Baobab every Friday of the week.
Right.
And we talk to policymakers, politicians, leaders across the globe.
Africa,
I should say.
To be precise, yes.
Please subscribe to our YouTube channel so that you can be part of the conversation.
Today, we are asking a really simple question, George, which does not appear simple when you look at the state of the country we are talking about today, which is Zimbabwe.
Yes. Why does Zimbabwe's opposition look so fragmented? And is that helping President Mnangagwa tighten his grip on power?
So some say in Zimbabwe that this is deliberate. The case of a ruling party strategy to weaken dissents, I mean, those who are rising against the government that is in power, and that it is worsening the daily struggles of ordinary Zimbabweans.
Yes, and this is not unique to Zimbabwe, Mimi, as you may understand. Every time we've had opposition politicians saying that the government is working towards weakening the opposition. So we had a conversation with Mwawarire Jealousy, and it was just to interrogate, is the opposition doing enough?
So he is not just anyone. He is a key opposition figure in Zimbabwe, and he's also one of the fiercest critics of President Emmerson Mnangagwa. We know him during the era of the former president, who is of late now,
Robert Mugabe. Yes.
But we are curious to just know exactly what the opposition is doing, because it seems like things are really not going well in the country.
Indeed, that was the first question I put to him, and it was whether the opposition division is self-inflicted.
The fragmentation is actually part of the plan by the current president to kill opposition even within his own political party, opposition outside his own political party. But the purpose is to demobilize.
Mr. Jealous, just for fairness, the president or the ruling party representative is not here to defend these claims that you are putting across. It's like a chorus across the continent where opposition shifts the blame to the government, saying that they are the ones who are, you know, causing the fragmentation within. Why are you not taking responsibility?
You asked me a question, why there's fragmentation, and I'm just giving you the reason. And the reason that the president of the country, who is the president of ZANU-PF and its first secretary, embarked on an official or on a program to demobilize, to dislocate opposition politics, both within his political party and outside his political party. And you have to take into consideration that the current president comes in on the backdrop of a military takeover, but also an onslaught on demonstrators on the 1st of August 2018, where more than seven people were gunned down in front of international television cameras. And if that was not meant to dislocate and to frighten political opponents of the president, then nothing can be further from the truth.
Indeed, maybe the events that led to the 2018 onslaught against demonstrators sent shockwaves across Zimbabwe. And just for context, in 2018, Zimbabwean Uprising was a series of protests against the disputed presidential election results and the regime of the current president, Emmerson Mnangagwa.
So it was also a protest against what the people described as deteriorating economy and deepening national political crisis under the current president. And we reported, you remember, we reported extensively on how this protest turned deadly after army officials started opening fire as demonstrators. Yes. Like what we've been seeing across West and other parts of Africa, or even in Kenya, we've seen that recently.
Yeah, that happened. But in the Zimbabwean case, you remember this was happening after the late president was overthrown. That is the late Robert Mugabe.
Right.
And Mnangagwa rising to power was seemingly sending a lot of hope to Zimbabweans that things may be different.
But do you really think there was hope, George? This is someone who was still a member of the same government coming after what has been described as a coup, because it's always been like a big debate. Was there actually a coup in Zimbabwe in the first place? Because someone just got replaced under the same political party, someone who was like a supporter of the former president that was not accepted, who was rejected by the population.
Yeah, definitely. You'd argue about the coup, but of course it happened indeed. And they had to install Mnangagwa as the figurehead to lead the country. But what Zimbabweans were expecting is the hope that with these changes of government, things will change. Our economy will start, doing better off, like compared to when Mugabe was in the presidency.
So at a time when the ruling, those who are in power are not doing enough to solve some of the economic, the social problems that are plaguing the country, people tend to the opposition.
Yes.
And with the case of Zimbabwe, we see that it's a little bit difficult for even the opposition to express themselves, like we've heard from Mr. Mawarire.
Yeah.
When you spoke to him, what did he say about the role of the opposition in Zimbabwe?
You know, just to backtrack, Mimi, you know, after the 20, the coup and then the preceding election, the opposition was seemingly united. And we saw that through the CCM party led by the Nelson Chamisa. And of course, we've seen this seeming unity dwindling down time over and again.
Right.
And right now, the opposition appears so fragmented in Zimbabwe.
So is that something that you discussed with Mawarire, just to understand why it's fragmented and how it is affecting the state of politics in Zimbabwe today?
Let's listen to what he told me.
I think before I answer that, I should also give you a bit of context, even on the way we are doing this this interview. I'm doing this interview not from Zimbabwe. I'm doing this interview from China. I'm not here in China because I want to be in China. I'm afraid of my life. So that's how the opposition has been dislocated in Zimbabwe.
Do you think this curtails your ability to effectively mobilize or educate the people?
To some extent, yes, but to some extent, no. Thanks to technology, we can interact even if we are not in the same geographical location. But in the current circumstances, we still fight, and we still fight on. And I can tell you that there are achievements that we have actually scored. We have seen that a lot of our citizens are beginning to realize that the president is old, that the president is suffering from some form of dementia called vascular dementia, and therefore is no longer in control. And they are beginning to ask questions on what needs to be done. And we have been providing guidance on what can be done if the president is no longer mentally sound.
Well, talking about the contribution of the opposition leaders, while it's true that opposition leaders in some countries, including Zimbabwe, have some sort of won that battle for change, people are still really questioning, are they doing enough?
Yes. And of course, we've already spoken about it. It caught our attention that Mao Arire was telling us that he's speaking from China. And in fact, he also had to change his background so that nobody can locate him. Mm-hmm. But here under the Baobab, we have a gang, and that is our people on the ground. And some have been asking this pertinent question. They want us to find out why some opposition leaders have led the fight from abroad.
The answer is simple and serious. Mm. It's about survival, because you cannot fight any battle
while you're dead. That's a no-brainer.
Right.
And there is also a school of thought saying that sometimes leaders should stand their ground.
Mm.
And there is that, you know, whipping emotions that you have your person leading you from the ground.
Especially when you're pushing for change and you have a lot of people looking up to you, you know.
Yes.
People see you as that change agent. They see you as that leader, that icon, that beacon of hope that they can depend on.
Yeah, definitely. And not to assume like we are being insensitive to Mr. Jealousy. I mean, I had to pin him down to just find out why can't he just come and lead the battle from home?
There's nothing ease in flying so many thousands of kilometers to be away from your home. It's not easy to be away from your family. It's not easy not seeing your children. The Constitution does not say that my safety is only guaranteed when I concur with the president in terms of how the country should be governed. Every Zimbabwean should have a right to life.
Don't get it twisted. I'm not advocating for you to put yourself, to risk. I really sympathize with your situation. I can't help it but ask the question that my Zimbabwean follower tasked me to ask you. Like, why not return? Just lead from the front.
Yeah, but we are targeted differently. And the most most dangerous thing in Zimbabwe right now is not that you will be gunned down by a bullet, but is that you will be poisoned. This current president has perfected the art of poisoning political opponents.
Is this being influenced by some external forces? Because we've understood that there are some countries, externally, who are rampant with issues of poisoning politicians.
Our investigations have linked this to the closeness that the president has with Belarus.
How do you overcome this fear and then remain on course on what Zimbabweans desire from you as a leader?
Taking a few days away and trying to re-strategize and see how best you can improve security around yourself. And I can't get into details on how I'm beefing up security around myself. Otherwise, it won't be security at all.
Poisoning. That's a strange one.
I mean, it's,
so it feels like when you say hi to someone in Zimbabwe, you have to be very careful.
You have to be very careful, and especially when you're fronting something that may appear to agitate the who is who in power, then you must be afraid. And of course, he's doubling down that he has to re-strategize, and in part of the strategy is, including being abroad and leading the battle from abroad.
Right. He has to be very careful.
Definitely.
Even if he's planning to go back home, he has to be very careful because he could be poisoned or harmed. We are not sure. But the gang is always having a voice because we mentioned them earlier. They are on the ground. We see them commenting on YouTube. They have a lot to say and we appreciate them. But as always, we give the floor to them to also express themselves. And this time around, we are going to Zimbabwe.
Definitely. That is why we asked our correspondent, Privilege Mushaniri, to ask Zimbabweans in Harare to share with us their views on the political situation in the country.
We are not happy as war veterans. Primarily because they now want to privatize. They now want to privatize the land, right? Whereas we had made sure the land is in the hands of the state, right? They are allowing the bourgeoisie, they are allowing the comprador bourgeoisie to retake the land. Many of us cannot afford to pay the amounts that they are asking for. And If we fail to pay, or if one fails to pay, it's an obvious case of repossession.
Zimbabwe is a country that is gravitating, or that has gravitated towards the dictatorship. You know, the things that we've heard in North Korea, in Russia. We never believed that it is going to happen to us, where citizens eventually no right at all, where the freedom of expression, freedom of movement, freedom of gathering has been curtailed by the regime.
We're suffering from inept political leaders, per se. I think that is what I can say, because there really hasn't been so much transformation in regards to the livelihoods of ordinary Zimbabweans, who are the ones who are suffering, who are make up the bulk of the voters, and who are always neglected after elections.
Yeah, so from land reform fears to dictatorship to economic collapse,
Zimbabweans are really... They are really frustrated, and it's very, very deep. And yet, fear of violent repression keeps many from mass mobilization. I mean, when we saw the fall of former late president Robert Mugabe, how Zimbabweans came out as one man to say no to repression, no to so many years of dictatorship. When you look at Zimbabwe now, people are so scared to even speak. I mean, to even say there's no water in my community is difficult for people to even come out to decry some of the ills that they are seeing in the society now.
Yeah, and I can understand those who are now piling pressure on the opposition and saying, you people are not doing enough. Yeah, and that's why I tasked Moari Ray to tell us if people in power as taking to the streets could still work for Zimbabwe.
The fact that Zimbabweans are not taking to the street does not mean to say that they've not mobilized themselves around issues, economic issues and political issues that that affect them. But it's an indication of the fear that has been instilled by the gunning down of those seven or more victims of the 2018 1 August massacres in front of international television cameras. The effect has been to make sure that people oppose the government, but from the safety of their homes.
But would that be effective? Will that be effective, Jealous? If you are you know opposing the government, you know policies, you are putting them to account from the safety of your house. And when you talk about fear, how do you overcome? Or should people just resign to, you know, to fear and say like, yeah, we fear and there is nothing we can do about it, and let the ruling party have its way?
One of the major problems that the ruling party is facing now in terms of changing the constitution, as you alluded to, is the idea of going for a referendum. They know for sure they are going to lose. So the people are aware of what is good for them. The people are aware of what needs to be done. So the moment the government... it's in a way that involves the people who have the final verdict.
So, George, I like the question you're asking about the fear in people in Zimbabwe. And that fear appears to be exactly what the president and his the system, the government relies on, a population that is too scared, so scared to rise up. Yeah, they don't want that.
We see this happening across the continent, right? We've reported people being, you know, discouraged to protest, mass mobilize from the Gambia, Cameroon.
Yeah, they are not just discouraged verbally. They are arrested, they are shot.
That is a form of intimidation in one way or the other. And you still have people who are questioning, what is the opposition doing about this?
Like you just said, it seems like the same story being written and across Africa. Because when we are talking about just this aspect, I'm just picturing the situation in Cameroon, where people go to the streets, are arrested, they stay in prison even for months, and you never, they are still awaiting trial. You don't even know what their crimes are.
Yeah. So when you ask people, they say opposition isn't doing enough. Jealousy had a different take.
I don't think that there's a disconnect. Because if people are saying you're not doing enough, It means that there is a lot of ground to be covered. And that's why in Zimbabwe, we are 16 million. Those that feel it's not what we are doing is not enough are also free to complement what we are doing or to do something completely different. And that will be welcome as long as the goals are achieved. We don't own exclusive rights to opposing the government. Neither do we put restrictive measures around those that want to oppose the government or those that want to work for their country, for that matter. Anyone who feels that we are not doing enough, I think it's a fair comment on their part, and it's also a realization that they can do something, and they are very welcome to come and work with us.
The opposition, they believe that they are doing a lot to mm-hmm. change things in the country. But George, when the discussion is tense, like yes. what we just saw, what do we do?
We normally step into the shed of wisdom and get to know our guest beyond the politics.
Here comes the rapid-fire question segment.
So would you prefer Harare or Bulawayo?
Bulawayo.
Radio interview or TV debate?
Both.
Both? You have to choose one. One only.
Television.
Okay. Coffee with Nangangwa or lunch with Chamisa?
That's a difficult one. Because those ones are almost like the same. I would prefer none of the above.
If you had to survive 1 week in rural Zimbabwe with no phone or car, what's the first thing that you would pack?
In Zimbabwe, we have what we call maputi, eh?
What's
so
that?
Roasted dry maize.
Oh, that's interesting. So yes. Which do you trust more, a Zimbabwean combi driver or a politician's campaign promise?
I don't trust both.
You have to choose one, you know? One.
None of the above.
Who is that one person you will never debate because they will definitely beat you in that debate?
President Mugabe.
President Mugabe, the late president. Okay.
Yes.
So, what's the most Zimbabwean thing about you that no one can take away?
The love for my country.
That's interesting.
How I wish every good thing that I'm seeing here in China was in Zim.
Wow. So, he still admires the
China.
Late president.
And, of course, China as well. Yeah, but
China.
That was also a highlight of the moment that he admires the late president, and maybe someone may
though
argue.
Though he did not agree with some of his policies, mm-hmm. Is that something that you discussed with him about the former president and what he thinks, like to compare the post-Robert Mugabe era and what we are, I mean, the post is now, right?
Yeah.
The Mugabe era and the post Robert Mugabe era.
Yeah, that is what I asked him. And of course, to just draw a comparison, and here is what he told us.
The difference is that President Mugabe was an intellectual. The difference is that the President Mugabe never went out full throttle to dismiss opposition political players from parliament. Like it or not, he was in power and he was pursuing some idea. And his idea was to make sure that the land gets back to the people of Zimbabwe. That was his rallying point. And that was his big idea.
So he's talking about land policies mm-hmm. that are not very conducive for many Zimbabweans. Imagine being a Zimbabwean and you own a piece of land and there's that possibility that that land might not be yours. So it takes away your complete identity, George.
Yeah.
And that's what we are seeing in Zimbabwe now.
Indeed, that is a very sticky issue. And the president stands accused, I'm talking about President Mnangagwa, he stands accused of forming a controversial land tenure implementation committee led by businessman Kada Kwashe Twagwire, which aims to establish freehold land ownership contrary to Zimbabwe's constitution.
Right.
Yes.
Which is contrary to what the former late president did before. What he did was he collected the land from white farmers who had some of this land and then gave it to Zimbabweans. And what we are seeing today is the president doing the contrary, taking it and asking people to pay before
yes.
owning their own land.
That is the fear you saw also the old man who spoke to us, the Zimbabwean who spoke to us earlier on, saying that is the fear they have. They don't have the money to pay, for this leasehold agreement, and they fear that their land may be repossessed by the government.
So are we seeing a situation where maybe in the next 5 or 10 years, Zimbabweans
will not feel at home anymore. They'll be like, where do I belong? Where is my own, you know, my own space? I do not even have a place to stay, like a piece of land.
Yeah, so constructively, I asked Jealousy what they want the president to do about this.
If the president wants to change the land tenure system in the country from state ownership to freehold land ownership, then he has to act legally. He has to change the constitution. He has to involve parliament. He has to involve the minister. He doesn't have to handpick his business proxy to front an illegal entity and go on a rampant exercise of asset stripping and illegally getting money from beneficiaries of the land reform.
Well, when you talk about the business people the president is working with, the name of a controversial self-declared
billionaire
Viknel Shivayo crops up.
Yes. You know, we've also at DW here, we've covered it on TikTok. It just went viral on our TikTok page, which is DW Africa. Of course, go and check it out. He's a flashy tycoon. Mm-hmm. Tycoon, business tycoon, rubbing shoulders with president. We've seen his pictures with the president of Kenya, president of Tanzania, the president of Zimbabwe as well. Mm-hmm. So many African presidents showering people with luxury cars and gifts. Imagine just someone just comes and says, this car belongs to you. And
I will tell you my answer later. So I asked Jealousy if Chivayo is part of the business people he is referring to.
No, yeah, definitely. Definitely, he's one of them. He comes out in the open to say he's the president's son. He comes in the open that he has the president by the balls. He comes out in the open and says that the administration is in his hands. And he has been fingered out in a report by the Financial Intelligence Center in South Africa of externalizing 2.2 billion rand. He's running briefcase companies, and these briefcase companies are drawing millions, hundreds of millions of United States dollars from.
Yeah, so Jealous, from a personal point of view, how do you always feel about such people?
My feeling is that those people do not just exist, but they are a creation of the current president. In order to deal with those people, you deal with their godfather. Mm-hmm. You deal with the president.
In dealing with their godfather, do you believe there is still a path to change through elections?
If we are going to go to elections, which will be in 2028, it means that we have resigned to the president going out by operation of law, because by 2028, he won't be contesting that. So the choice for Zimbabweans is to ignore him stripping assets from state-owned enterprises, from looting our national resources and waiting for him to go when his term of office ends by operation of law, or to hold him to account now. And I think what we need to do is to hold him to account now.
Holding him to account and seeing that there's change in Zimbabwe. George, when do you think the change will happen?
I don't know when the change will happen, but for sure, Zimbabweans, they have an opportunity to do that during election in 2028.
And George, who is your godfather?
Who is yours?
I asked you a question. You asked me, who is your godfather? Just tell me you don't have a godfather.
Yes, I don't have a godfather. But he was making mention of the business people who are working, purportedly working with the president, therefore making reference to the president as the godfather to these business people.
Right.
I am not working with any president.
I also don't have a godfather.
So, I mean, the future of Zimbabwe's democracy is crucial if change is to be realized. So what do you think needs to happen for Zimbabwe to reclaim fair elections, transparency, and real choices that reflect the people's will?
Good question. And do you think that the opposition needs to push harder? And what strategies will ensure that their messaging is effective in the face of serious oppression by the current regime? Your voice is truly valued here under the Baobab.
And Under the Baobab is streamed on all your digital platforms.
That's right, including Spotify,
Apple Podcasts,
And of course, here on our YouTube channel, DW Africa. My name is Mimi Mefonewu.
And my name is Jojo Kachi. Many thanks for joining us under the Baobab.